And our last reader of this set is Andrew Katz. Andrew Katz recently completed and defended his master's thesis in creative writing at Concordia. Now's the moment for the thunderous round of applause. And for the past 3 years, he has taught English at Champlain College in Lenoxville, but he's taken this semester off to clean up his apartment, read, and go outside more. So here he is outside. Please welcome Andrew.
These are especially useless in my case. I'm going to read you an abridged excerpt from the last few pages of the last story in my thesis. A young man of about 22, who also narrates the story, is feeling disconnected from everything and everyone, including himself, but also his father. He lives in an apartment in Montreal, but at the moment in the story is in Stratford, Ontario, seeing plays. He's also a medical student, by the way. At this point in the narrative, he has just been lifted off the ground, right high up into the blue of the late afternoon sky, by some invisible hand or something, he can't see or tell what, and he is being carried across the sky at a breakneck speed, the sky quickly dimming to twilight and evening and now night. He is being carried back in time, 30 years back, to when his dad was a young man himself. The only odd thing, other than that he's being carried across the sky, is that when, in the distance, he first sees his dad as a young man, his dad is standing on the balcony of the narrator's present-day sixth-floor apartment. But it's still all in the past. And everything that is happening here is sort of mysterious and surprising to the narrator, as if he were in a dream, but he is wide awake as all this is happening. He didn't see me as I was flown closer and closer, not even as I began to arc down out of the sky toward him, his attention transfixed elsewhere, at something high out in the night sky. But something else was happening too. Like Alice in Wonderland, I was shrinking, so that by the time I had been lowered down and was hovering in midair in front of his chest, I was only a few inches tall, not half a thumb's length. I looked up at his face, which appeared above the hill of his chest, to check if he had detected me now, but I was not even born yet. There was no reason for him to suspect that anyone was with him here, and he just kept staring up at the faintly starred sky. It occurred to me that there must be an entrance, a hidden door, somewhere in his chest, and then a small door did open slowly. Behind the door you could see nothing but dark, as if you were peering into a cave. A moment later, a figure ambled out of the dark up towards the doorway, and a tall, thin, stooped butler appeared in front of me. His expression was friendly, reminding me of Alfred, the butler from Batman. He was more or less bald, except for the thin, gray card of hair below each caved-in temple, and his manner was deliberate, measured, like a Buddhist monk, neither tarrying nor hurrying. He paused there as if waiting for me to ask to come in. It seemed important to ask, as if it were part of some ritual, although it seemed to go without saying that I would be admitted. I asked, not out loud. Somehow we were able to communicate almost telepathically through our expressions and gestures, and the butler gave a slow, slight nod, and stepping aside, motioned that I was now welcome to come in. Without a sound, the door closed behind me. The butler was somewhere nearby, but I couldn't see him. The room was all dark, so dark you couldn't tell if it even was a room. There was no sense of walls or ceiling, although the dark overhead felt rounded, airy. Without holding onto my arm or shoulder or anything, the butler guided me. Very soon I could see or begin to see something up ahead, a small white light that seemed to be coming from the very center of the room. As I approached it, I could discern a white pillar, Roman-like but thinner and short, just waist-high. And as I came up next to the pillar, I could see, perched on top of it, an ordinary white stone. The stone could have fit in the palm of your hand. Close around it, emanating from it, was also an aura of white, white light. There was nothing eerie or haunting about the aura. It had the quality of reality rather than of magic, of substance rather than of illusion. I wouldn't try to describe to you the shape of it, but it seemed at once young and ancient, like a small piece of rock left over from the Big Bang, from the universe's tumultuous creation, an original stone that had never been cut or chiseled or shaped in any way. An inclination came over me, and I looked up toward the butler, who stood in the background, barely visible, supervising but not interfering. Again, with just a look, I asked him if I could touch the stone. I sensed he would nod, and with a reassuring smile, he did, not so much to give me permission as to confirm that I was doing what I needed to do. I turned back again towards the stone and reached out. I didn't have to stretch far. I just had to lower my finger until it touched against the stone. What happened then was instant. The white light that had been huddled around the stone leapt up along my finger, up my arm, right over my head, down my back, and all around my body, like cool water rippling over me, as if I had stepped into a waterfall. I couldn't believe what was happening, this feeling, and at the same time, it felt like the most real thing that had happened to me in longer than I could remember. The light rushing from the stone to me and back again, back and forth in a seamless flow. The stone was still the stone, and I was still myself, yet the one touching and the one being touched were not two. A few seconds, an eternity later, I lifted my finger, slowly. As quickly as a circuit is broken, the light around me vanished and went back to the way it was, in a steady aura around just the stone. Now I was standing in the dark again, with the stone sitting inconspicuously in its close emanation. Not more than a minute passed, though, before I wanted to touch the stone again. More urgently than before, I looked up to find the butler's face. But the butler shook his head this time, though his smile was still understanding. He seemed to be telling me, and somewhere inside me I realized, I already knew this, that this experience, this opportunity to connect with this white stone inside my dad, had been a gift, offered so that I could know, so that I could feel that it was there, that it was real. Now that I had felt it, though, now that I knew it, it was time to go. But I didn't want to know this. I didn't want to leave. Turning away from the butler, I reached towards the stone again. This time, though, instead of coming alive, its aura dimmed, fading as I touched my finger against it. And this time, the point where I touched was jagged. I felt a cut happen, and as I yanked away my hand, a few drops of blood trickled down my finger. Within moments, the stone began to emanate its white aura again. I had not done any damage to it. I understood, though, now, with a grief filling my chest, that I really did have to leave. And I realized it was not a matter of imposed rules or prohibitions. It was a matter of natural law. I could not stay here inside my father. Thanks.